Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Are you ready, kids? Get your parents' permission, check your mailbox, and grab your shopping cart. It's time for the Adventures in Collecting podcast.
I'm Eric.
And I'm Dave.
Welcome to Adventures in collecting,
where we talk toy news, culture, and hauls,
along with our journeys as collectors.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Adventures in Collecting. The awkward pause that is normally there is not going to be there this week because my darling, wonderful, lovable brother Dave is on vacation. So I have been given both the main pilot seat and the co-pilot seat for this week. So I either deeply apologize for either reason, listener, why you're upset. So either you're upset that it's just me, or you're upset that that Dave is missing. I apologize, but I am not alone. And as Dave would like to normally say, Eric, please don't bury the lead. So I will not bury the lead. We do have a guest with us this week. I have a guest with me this week. I might say we and us a lot this episode, and it will not apply, and I apologize again for that. But so we do have a guest this week, and I am super excited to have this conversation. This has been a long time coming. Founded in 2014, Spiro Toys focuses on delivering highly articulated and designed collectible action figures for the collector market. Joining us this week on the show is Jason Bienvenu, managing partner at Spiro Toys. Jason, welcome to Adventures in Collecting.
Thank you for having me on. I can't wait to talk about action figures and awesome, fun, upcoming stuff for 2024.
Yeah, I am super excited to have you on. Some of the Animal Warriors of the Kingdom figures that have come out this year have been among, you know, the most enjoyable things that I've collected. So I'm really excited to kind of chew the fat with you. But before we jump into all of that, as this is a show about collecting, the first thing that we ask all of our guests, what are you currently collecting and what are some of your recent pickups?
I would say I am mainly collecting at the moment G.I. Joe Classified, as well as the He-Man Masterverse figures. I am also collecting Mythic Legions as well as Cosmic Legions. Let me think. I do love, you know, I'm constantly collecting Marvel Legends, and I've started to kind of dip my toes a little bit into the McFarlane stuff. I'll pick up a few of those figures here and there, and I think that's pretty much it for now.
So is there anything that you picked up recently that has kind of brought you a little joy?
So I like to give myself I like to give future Jason presents from Amazon or Big Bad. Let me see, what did I recently get? I think I got the Slush Head from Masterverse, as well as the Buzz Off, which I had really been looking for that for quite a while, and then I also got in some of the Crimson Alley Vipers, the Walmart exclusives, which nice. Are really, really awesome figures. I'm glad I waited. The Sherbert Orange just never did it for me, even as a kid. So I'm glad I waited on those. And then the last thing I picked up was at this last show that we just came from in Los Angeles. And I picked up two of the Legions, Cosmic Legions figures that I actually meant to pick up at Legions Con, but wound up being too busy at the booth.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean all of those lines have you know, a lot of love for them. Personally, when it comes to the Masterverse stuff, I love the fact that they're going back to the 86 live action film, the Dolph Lundgren film.
Right, right. I actually like all of them except for the Dolph one. I feel like the they probably couldn't get the likeness rights or something, and I just felt like that head could have been dialed in a little bit better. But you know, for the most part, they're really, really great.
Yeah, I ended up picking up the Ramen Toys, the third party head for that figure.
Oh, I didn't even realize they had that. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, they did a limited run that likeness, and they completely crushed it.
Oh, cool. Well, you know, I believe it's a Walgreens exclusive, and I can't. Oh, Centurion, the Centurion Marvel Legends figure has a fantastic head that I think goes really well on several of the He-Man figures from the Masterverse. So that's an option too, as well.
Yeah, I love the part swapping stuff. Like it's always fun to see. I see a lot of people doing it with the classifieds too. I know a lot of people are using the Hank Pym West Coast Avengers Marvel Legends head for the Chuckles body. They think it's a better Chuckles likeness.
Oh, okay. But, yeah, that's cool.
I've seen a couple pictures of that. So, you know, clearly you're collecting a lot, but how did you get into the actual place of toy design?
Well, around 2011, I remember, you know, sitting on my couch and really wanting to do something. And at the time, Xbox was offering this program where you could, you could make your own video games and submit that and everything. And I actually drew a whole bunch of sprites and backgrounds and whatnot and couldn't find a programmer. And then the next thing I thought was, well, maybe I could do a comic book. And I had been doing graphic design, and I was doing something for like a drive-through zoo, and I was just drawing a bunch of animals and whatnot. And I thought, well, maybe animals would be kind of a fun way to tell the hero's tale. So I started working to find some sort of main protagonist. And I wound up deciding between like a lemur and a monkey. And I thought, well, a monkey will be a little bit more fun for me to draw over time. The facial expressions will be a little bit easier to show. And so I decided on the monkey, and at that point, Pale was born, and I did a Kickstarter in order to get in order to pay for the printing of the comics. And it was really just for the first issue. But, you know, once the Kickstarter became a reality, I thought, okay, now I've got people that are depending on me. So I went ahead and did all six issues of the comic book. And, with the success from that, I tried to leverage the characters from the comic into a toy line. And I thought, you know, at the time, my little girl was collecting Ninja Turtles, and there was a certain type of Ninja Turtle that was really modular. So I kind of took some inspiration from that and tried a Kickstarter, and that Kickstarter ultimately wasn't successful. So after a couple of weeks of feeling sorry for myself, I kind of went back to the drawing board and saw what kind of critiques and what actually collectors were looking for, and basically took a whole year to learn how to use social media as far as advertising goes, and redoing all the sculpts and whatnot. And that Kickstarter wound up going well. We did a little bit more than we asked for, so we had a little bit of a buffer, and we got that toy line produced. And then from that success, we did the same scale, but a little bit bigger, because there's different size, you know, characters in the comic, and that's important to me. So we did a Kickstarter for that. That was successful as well. And then I started wanting to do conventions and raising brand awareness for people that might not be, you know, just Kickstarter followers or whatnot. And so I signed up for Toy Fair, and then this little thing called COVID happened. And I got a call from Toy Fair saying that they were going to cancel the event. All the buyers had pulled out. And I remember just kind of sitting in the parking lot thinking, well, I like 6-inch scale stuff. And, I had been buying 6-inch scale Black Series, Marvel Legends, Power Rangers. So I went ahead and I talked to my buddies who I was already friends with, the sculptors. And, you know, we kind of talked about doing it in 6-inch scale. And so I spent the next 4 or 5 months, kind of dialing in the six core characters that we were going to do before we launched that Kickstarter. And we launched a Kickstarter, but before we launched it, I talked to our factory and I was like, listen, you know, we want to do stretch goals and everything, but I don't want to do anything that's going to put a strain on the factory as far as like, you know, having too many SKUs or, you know, confusing numbers and whatnot. So the factory gave me what they were comfortable with for stretch goals. And we launched, and I thought, you know, if we make this goal, because I was asking for more than I had ever asked for before, you know, I'll be a happy camper. And we wound up making goal the first week, which was amazing, because then, you know, everything else is just icing on the cake, right? And so we started unlocking stuff, and you know, towards the end of it, we were like, I was 3D printing stuff at night and hurrying up and painting it in the morning and taking photos of it. And posting stuff, and we wound up unlocking everything except for the last big figure, our big deluxe Thane figure. And on the last day, we had a great, you know, 3D render of it and everything. But on the last day, I think we had like 3 hours to go. It finally got unlocked, and I was just like, "Holy cow!" And it just kind of seemed to skyrocket that last day. So I just kind of remember pinching myself and being like, "Wow, holy cow! I can't believe that happened," you know. And then, like we said, you know, then the real work began, and production on the Primal series began at that point.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I remember when you guys launched that that Kickstarter, and the moment I saw those kind of core figures, I had a gut feeling that the project was going to take off very quickly, and you know, it did. It's just, there's something about, and we've, you know, I've mentioned this a couple times on the show. Especially with kind of these original IPs, there's this, I don't want to say like comfort zone, but there, when there's something familiar about the characters, but also new and fresh, and it kind of toes that line. Right. I know it sounds like doublespeak, but like, you know, when it has that, you know, that fine line between familiarity and new and fresh, that tends to be what people really look for and gravitate towards.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, I feel like we really hit that Goldilocks zone where, like you said, it feels familiar, but it's something new. And part of the idea behind the line was something that happened to me when I was in high school. There was a little stretch where I was thinking to myself, well, I'm starting to grow up. I can't be playing toys and watching cartoons and all that stuff, which was really tough because I loved all that stuff. You know, I was like really kind of nerdy and geeky and whatnot. And, you know, something kind of clicked. I think the pinnacle of it where I was just, I couldn't resist anymore was when, McFarlane released their Metal Gear figures, and that game had come out, and I was just like, you know what? I like toys and everything. And what I'm getting at is, you know, there was this window where there was a bunch of stuff that came out that I just didn't know about. I wasn't interested in it. And, you know, and then I see it years later and I'm like, whoa, what is this thing called Street Sharks? Or what is this thing called Biker Mice from Mars? Or, you know, those were a couple things that kind of like people my age that just continued to collect really liked that stuff. And I got to kind of rediscover it. So the idea was similar to that, where it was, maybe this came out a long time ago and I'm just discovering it. And it kind of really reminds me of the nostalgia of being a kid and whatnot. And then the other end is obviously, you know, we have these comic books that I'm really proud of. And we're actually wrapping up the fifth issue, which is the first story arc. And it's the familiar hero's tale that, you know, Western culture just loves that hero's tale. And, you know, so we do a little bit of world building. We do a little bit of our main character, Pale, building his team out so that whenever he encounters, you know, the next antagonist in the next story arc, he'll have that core team built. And also the comic book kind of served as like little sneak peeks and clues of what figures we're going to be offering as the waves, you know, as the toy line grows and as we introduce the world of Awoker, Animal Wars of the Kingdom.
So going back to that and the comic book and even kind of the initial inspiration being the work that you were doing for the zoo, you know, Animal Warriors of the Kingdom has had a remarkable, you know, last 2 years. But, you know, what kind of drew you to those specific animals? You know, I know you mentioned the concept of being able to kind of show the emotions of a primate character, but you know, the selection is very, I feel like, is very unique, and especially your take on the animals.
Oh, thank you. You know, I think there's some, I think that the apes, the great apes, really approach that uncanny valley that, you know, they're very fascinating to us and they're not quite human, but they're just so close. And, you know, kind of studying chimps and seeing how violent they can be and how territorial, and, you know, they've got this amazing hierarchy that they work around with, and there's no language, you know, there's this kind of unspoken body language that they understand. Something about that was very fascinating. And I thought it was a great starting off point because the reader is going to be starting off in this brand new world where they're going to be exploring other cultures and the forms of animals. And this is kind of the closest we're going to get to the human experience while being introduced to new alien or, you know, animal life forms. So it just felt like kind of a good jumping off point.
And where did the idea for your hero come from? Well, what inspired you when you were actually writing the story here?
So, you know, I write Pale as me as a teenager. You know, it's fun to write his dialogue because it's pretty much just my dialogue, but, you know, probably 20 years ago, I would say. So his dialogue's pretty easy to write. And, you know, before I throw any of my characters into a situation, I've got backstories for them. I know exactly, you know, who they are, what their character's like. And so whenever we place situations in front of them, it's very easy for me to know how's Mala going to react to something as opposed to Pale. And, you know, how's Kali going to react to something not going correct or exactly to plan? So knowing what their personalities are before really kind of starting the plot points really helps me. And I try to write their dialogue different. I find a lot of people, you know, reading scripts and stuff, if I know the person, it's like I almost read the dialogue in their voice, and that's not what I want to do. You know, if you've read the comics, you'll see that Mala very, very rarely says can't or won't. She will say cannot or will not. Kali's very similar, but not quite as strict in his speech. And, you know, Pale and Atreyu will have a little bit more slang and have a little bit looser, kind of natural speaking voices. So writing all that different dialogue is really fun.
Now, speaking, you know, of these characteristics of these original characters, considering now that, you know, the comics are kind of informing the toys down the line, you know, showing the characters that are coming, when you're adding new characters to the mix or making changes to existing characters, are you kind of simultaneously thinking about how that affects the upcoming toys, or is it kind of the toys are reactionary to the source material?
You know, I would say it's a bit of both. Like we had a question about why the Void toy was noticeably smaller than he was in the book. And the simple answer to that is because, you know, we want to have that body type shared across several characters. And the original character that Buck is made off of or based off of is King Hannibal. So that is truest to his form. And so, you know, we didn't want to make a whole nother Buck for the Void. So we just kind of shrunk him down by like maybe like 10 to 15%. As far as like the characters go, one of the things that I was really conscientious of about was anytime we see a variant of Pale or Atreyu or Kali or anything like that, it needs to be in the story. We don't want to just have like, you know, Sherbert colored Batman, you know, even though I loved that as a kid, we need it to make sense in the story. So that's something that I've been really strict about. But, you know, we, you know, Utoma and I talk about when we're going to introduce everything, like, you know, the rabbit character Kanji isn't introduced until issue 3. And we're going to be doing the issue. The first issue is not going to be out in stores until March 6th. So we've got that buffer, you know, so by the time issue 3 comes out, people will have already had the chance to, you know, order that figure and be excited about it.
So what you're telling me is that that Surfing Pale and Spaceman Pale and Dressed Up as Cowboy Pale, those aren't coming anytime soon.
You know what? You never know. The Space Pale is actually something that could possibly happen, but it's gonna make sense, especially once you've read the stories. The Cowboy Pale, not so much. But the Surfing Pale, man, that sounds fun. I wouldn't have him like in, you know, palm tree swimming trunks and like surfing on water. We might have him like, you know, maybe surfing down the side of a ship that's disintegrating. And he's like standing on like a piece of, you know, the hull that came loose. But I don't know if that would translate to a figure, but it seems like it'd be a fun scene in the book or comic book. Or excuse me, cartoon eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, hey, it's the thing that was always fun about those, like, and I always, my brain always immediately goes back to Kenner whenever this conversation happens, because they were like the masters of the weird, like super toyetic repaint that
right.
had nothing to do with the source material. You know,
right.
the gold and black Batman and
right.
you know, like,
oh my gosh,
like,
I still have that Batman. That's a great Batman.
I always remember Arctic Batman with the white, like, could you ever Batman
yeah.
in white? Like, come
so
on. But like, I you know, those figures were fun. They were fun.
They really
added
right?
so much play.
And that's the thing is, you know, it's, you know, we're poking fun at it, but we know like how fun that was. So it's like, how do you take that fun and incorporate it into a way that's, you know, that our adult minds can suspend the disbelief, you know? So, I mean, I don't know how much of the comic book you read, but, you know, we've got some upcoming variants of Pale and Atreyu in gladiator attire, you know? So, and it makes total sense because it's in the book, you know? But, I don't know. I'm very aware of like making toys toyetic. I've heard a lot of people they find the pins in certain figures very distracting, and it's funny because I find it kind of charming in a way. Some of our characters, you know, the Pale Buck does have pins in it, but the pins are flush with the arm, so it's not quite as noticeable. There's armor and stuff that kind of covers it and whatnot, but I think it kind of goes back to my love of the movie Toy Soldiers and how those little characters really look like toys. You know, it's just one of those things where I don't necessarily want something that just looks like a statue. You know, there's that fine balance of, you know, aesthetic and functionality. And it's all very interesting and fun to try to figure out what my ideal is.
So continuing that kind of thought, you know, the thing that kind of sets Animal Warriors of the Kingdom and Spiro Toys apart, you know, there is an ever expanding, you know, it's beyond cottage industry at this point, an expanding full on industry of indie toys out there. What would you say really sets Animal Warriors of the Kingdom apart from kind of the field?
You know, that's a great question. I think because we've got a really great comic book and we've done the world building so that whenever you see stuff like the Void and you're like, I've seen the other figures. I don't understand how this works in. I think the toys having characters and personality that are associated with each figure sets us apart. And I'm very proud of that, you know, it's not just a cool looking figure. They're featured in the comic. They have their own mythos and part of the story that we're telling. And whenever we set up the story, I wanted to build the sandbox in a certain way that we could have fun sci-fi stuff and have mythological and magic stuff in the way that Masters does. And I feel like we've achieved that.
Now, one of the other things that I love about the line is the ability of kind of customization. You know, the way that parts are swappable, and you recently posted on Instagram this awesome video of kind of like building your own Animal Warriors of the Kingdom figure by buying one of the plane figures and then buying the accessory packs and everything. So that customization aspect, I think, is a huge selling point for a lot of people outside of myself. What goes into the design process to make sure that that whole concept works?
As far as the engineering goes, it's got its own set of challenges, but I think, you know, I've got a particular color palette. So if you happen to collect the line, you'll notice that Atreyu's fur is the same color as Cordoon's fur, and there's an adventure pack with a head that matches both of those figures. So you could potentially turn those two figures into potentially three different characters or even six different characters, just mixing and matching. And the same thing with Lexion and the Ancients Ash, there's a gray head. So I really tried to just make sure that we had a bunch of heavy hitters that also have the potential for cross play with not only our line, but, you know, Masters and Mythic and an upcoming toy line that's awesome called Savage Crucible.
Some
other stuff it's eluding me at the time right now, but, you know, I spent a lot of time thinking and making sure that it would be very customizer friendly. The one exception that I would say as far as like customizing goes is for safety issues, we actually designed the pelvis and the ab section to not pop apart. Instead of doing that, we recommend that people pop it off at the hip so you can like take off that skirting. And once it's actually super easy, it's just one of those things that you need to know before you try to do it. But yeah, we're really proud of the customization. Over the weekend, I actually had an idea for an upcoming offering that would be the Ancients Definitive Edition, where, you know, it'd be an ape. You know, it might have an ape head on it, but it will include a cat head, cat hands and feet. So that way, someone that wants to, you know, do cat characters can do that, and then other person can do an ape character, and we're going to put all the bells and whistles on it. We'll do dry brushing. It'll have all kind of really great paint applications. That way, if someone doesn't feel like doing the paint themselves, they can do this character or this offering, as opposed to the current Ancients offering is really meant as a base that people can paint and color the way they really like.
And now, a word from our sponsors.
This segment is brought to you by our friends at Chubsy Wubsy Toys. A traditional mom-and-pop toy store in Little Falls, New Jersey, Chubsy Wubsy Toys brings you the best new toys from the brands you love without the hassle of pounding the pavement searching for them at larger retail stores. Visit them in person at their brand new home at 101 Newark Pompton Turnpike Suite 1 in Little Falls, New Jersey, or online at ChubsyWubsy.com. That's ChubsyWubsy.com. And tell them Adventures in Collecting sent you.
Did you know that CGC Video Games now offers cleaning services for your favorite collectibles? Make your collectibles look good as new and give them that extra life in our crystal clear holders. With professional cleaning for sealed, complete in box, and cartridge-only games, maximize the potential of your collection. Submit today at cgcgrading.com. That's cgcgrading.com.
Face it, shaker bottles suck. Your shakes always come out clumpy and they're a pain to clean.
You're right, Dave. That's why I decided to ditch my shaker bottle for good and get myself a BlendJet 2 portable blender. It makes perfectly blended shakes in just 20 seconds.
BlendJet 2 is portable, so you can blend up a smoothie at work, a protein shake at the gym, or even a margarita on the beach. It's small enough to fit in a cup holder, but powerful enough to blast through tough ingredients like ice and frozen fruit with ease.
BlendJet 2 is whisper quiet, so you can make your morning smoothie without waking up the whole house. It lasts for over 15 blends and recharges quickly via USB-C.
Best of all, BlendJet 2 cleans itself. Just blend water with a drop of soap and you're good to go.
With an array of colors, patterns, or even Disney-inspired designs to choose from, show off your personality while you're blending up something delicious on the go.
What are you waiting for? Go to blendjet.com and grab yours today.
And be sure to use the promo code AICPOD12 to get 12% off your order and free 2-day shipping. No other portable blender on the market comes close to the quality, power, and innovation of the BlendJet 2. They guarantee you'll love it or your money back. Blend anytime, anywhere with the BlendJet 2 portable blender. Go to blendjet.com and use the code AICPOD12 to get 12% off your order and free 2-day shipping. Shop today to get the best deal ever.
And now back to the show.
Now, speaking of color, you mentioned that you have a very specific color palette, but I want to go even deeper than that. I love the color combinations that you're using. So, like,
oh, thank you.
Personally, my favorite of the figures, I love the colorway of Blight. The blue mohawk with the purple armor, with like the kind of metallic teal hits on the weapons. Like that was my first AWOC figure. And
okay,
you know, when I got that one, I was like, oh man, this is like legit.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah. What kind of goes into that color selection? I know, you know, since it's your story and you kind of own the whole thing, you know, what kind of inspires this color palette that you're working with?
So the current iteration or the current phase of this of what's out so far is my 90s color palette. As we go further into the sci-fi aspect of AWOC, then we'll start to blend in my 70s color palette. And what I mean by that is, you know, the 90s have a lot of neon colors. Neon colors were kind of introduced back then. They kind of crept in a little bit in the 80s, but I feel like the early 90s was when they really started to flourish. So there's a lot of really bright saturation and, kind of just fun colors that complement each other. And then, for the sci-fi stuff, it's a little bit more muted stuff, subdued colors, a lot of like, you know, egg white as opposed to like really bright white. Instead of yellow, you might have like a yellow gold, a burnt sienna orange, kind of like cloudy blues, stuff like that. Right now we're in Jason's 90s color palette. And then as we go further into the story, we'll start to kind of get into that 70s, a little bit more muted, subdued color palette.
Yeah, you can already see that start to kind of hint its way into the line. I'm just looking at the Wave 4 pre-orders again.
Right.
And you can see that Pale's colors are getting a little more muted, a little darker.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really cool way to transition from the shock 90s brights into, you know, that kind of, dystopic,
right.
Faded.
Yeah. Colors. And it's great for, storytelling wise, cause you know, a lot of times we're doing, you know, there's set locations. There's, you know, we have our A story, our B story, and then we've got subplots on top of it. So, we need to let the reader know, like, hey, it's nighttime on this location, and then it might be dawn in another location on the B story and whatnot. So all those colors really play an important role that should be almost subconscious. You know, the reader might not necessarily be paying attention to it, but it's meant to kind of help them kind of get their bearings when they're reading through or experiencing the comics. And the toys are meant to be, you know, the comics jumping off the page, essentially. So,
and have there been any challenges in getting those colors to translate the way that you want? You know, getting the factory to deliver on, you know, the expectation.
That's a great question. So the first time we did the toys, I had my own Pantone color book, which, you know, if people don't know what that is, it's just, it's almost like it's almost like this little book you'll see at the, you know, at Lowe's or at Home Depot in the paint section, they'll have these color swatches. It's very similar to that, but it's just a book. I realized that the factory had a different book than me. So they didn't get the colors quite right on our first try for the 4-inch scale. And once I moved factories and everything, and I got my, you know, our current project manager, I would buy two of the same color book, and I would mail them one, and I would keep one for myself, and we would do, paint masters. So I would paint, you know, three of each figure, and I would keep two and send them one. So that way we could really kind of dial in those colors and make sure they translated well. And I have to say, they just really nailed it as across the board as far as like what I sent them.
Yeah, that's awesome. And yeah, Pantone colors come up quite frequently on this podcast.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Yep. I love We're them. Familiar with the color Bible, the color Bible.
Perfect.
Yeah. So, you know, we've talked kind of at length about the cast of characters here and the types of animals that we have. And, you know, we have primates and cats and mongrels and bunnies and rabbits, bunnies. you know, we have all these different animals kind of entering the world here. When it comes to, you know, introducing a new animal type into the mix, how do you go about selecting, you know, what animals coming in and more on that, you know, can we expect more animals in the future?
So I'll answer the second question first. We're definitely going to be experiencing and seeing more animals in the second story arc. As far as the animals that are introduced, Utoma and I kind of made an unofficial map. Because, you know, Pale's basically making a journey. It's not a linear line, but they're kind of moving around as they're being pursued. So they start off at House Chinar, which is a breakaway section of the main ape house, which is the Horde. And they basically seek refuge in the neighboring kingdom, which is the Feralus, which is the cats. And there's several great houses in the animal kingdom, you know, where the story takes place. But then they also have, you know, lesser houses and then even smaller kind of serfdoms. So, you know, as the story progresses, we know they're in the Feralus house and they're kind of being pushed, and they actually get kind of pushed out into the Feralus serf section, which happens to be the rabbits. They're, you know, the cats protect them in exchange for crops and whatnot, and they'll get pushed further and further. So we have an idea, you know, geographically what the land looks like and, you know, where they're going to move next. They're kind of on the run and everything. And so maybe they're going to see, you know, maybe they're going to get to, you know, pachyderms or something like that. But I'm trying not to spoil stuff.
Yeah.
But we do have stuff planned out. We know exactly like where the houses are and what their territories are. So it just depends on where the team is going to be pushed in the story. And in the second story arc, it's a lot more, there's going to be a lot more traveling. In the first story arc, they're almost kind of like in this, you know, it takes place in a very localized region of the world that they're in. It's almost kind of like, you know, they might, the whole story might take place in like the New England area. No, it's not a huge geographical place, but it's also not like this tiny island. In the next story arc, they're going to be dealing with trade routes and stuff and pirates and whatnot. So they'll be traveling a lot more in the second story arc, I should say.
Awesome. And you know, so far we've seen, you know, all mammals. Is that kind of the course at this point, or you know, could we potentially
not at all
outside of mammals?
No. So, how many have you read the stories yet, or no?
I admittedly, I've only read the first issue.
Okay, so they won't start seeing other non-mammal characters until the fifth issue, which is, you know, kind of late in the story arc, but we are going to see birds and other kind of characters. Actually, I take it back. They do have a couple of cameos of non-mammal characters, but nothing, you know, nothing major. In the fifth issue, we'll start to really see, you know, there'll be birds and then going forward into the next story arc, they'll visit a fishing village and, you know, reptiles and whatnot. So it's definitely going to continue to grow as far as like different animal types goes.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of the kind of toyetic nature of all of this, that's like all those different types of animals present all different types of fun engineering hoops that you have to jump through, I'm sure.
Right, right. Yeah, I was really kind of thinking today about, you know, the reptiles and stuff and how they, you know, they have, you know, really shiny skin. They're kind of, and some of them are iridescent. And the same with fish and whatnot. So I was, you know, I had a little bit of time on my hands this afternoon. I was just kind of mulling around what, you know, how those paint applications would work.
So before we wrap on just the animal warriors of the kingdom, the one thing you had kind of hinted at, you know, talking about source material was, you know, an eventual, you know, animated experience, you know, outside of the comic. Is that something that has, you know, any sort of ETA on it? When will people hear more about, you know, about that?
So whenever I decided to do the comic book, I was sitting on the couch and just kind of thinking, what is the dream scenario? And at the time I thought, you know, I can make a comic. I just have to sit there and draw it out. And then the toys was the next logical step. And then kind of the trifecta would be getting, you know, a syndicated cartoon that would, you know, it formed that circular advertising or brand awareness loop from the 80s that proved to be so popular and well received. As far as a cartoon goes, I really believe on, you know, leveraging baby steps. And like I said, the comic was the first phase and then toys was the third phase. And so I'm hoping that we can leverage the success of the toys and the comics to get a showrunner interested in you know, pitching it, because that's who's really going to pitch it to, you know, streaming networks or, you know, whatever, whenever it might be aired on.
Well, I, you know, definitely look forward to hearing more about that developing, because, you know, these characters are super cool. And, you know, personally, I can't wait to read more of the comic. It was something that was sitting in my to read pile for quite some time. And, in order to get ready for the episode, I ripped the Band-Aid off and I was like, man, I only downloaded issue one. So now I got to go get the other ones.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
So from the animal warriors of the kingdom and you know this plethora of wildlife to feudal Japan, tell us about the new IP that you announced.
Yeah, right? So we're gonna be,
what a transition.
What's that?
So what a transition.
I know that's a segue, right? So one of our sculptors, Dan, had been wanting to do something for himself. And I said, listen, just do what you want. We'll produce it and make sure that you can, you know, do exactly what you want. And he settled on feudal Japan paired with, you know, samurai paired with Oni. And I was like, that's fantastic. And when we debuted them, we just happened to watch Blue Eyed Samurai on Netflix, which I highly recommend. Do not watch it with the kids. It's very adult oriented.
I've heard. But
it just made us so excited for the line. We're like, oh man, that's right up our alley. We also watched Onimusha before that, which I think is really good too, but I recommend watching Onimusha first just because Blue-Eyed Samurai is so amazing. Not taking anything away from the other one, but they're both really cool. And I feel like we kind of we're kind of introducing it right at the right at an opportune time where it seems like samurai stuff's really becoming popular again. I saw that there's an Assassin's Creed game that made an announcement, and I want to say I kind of watched The Last Samurai maybe once a year just because it's such a great film.
It's an awesome movie.
And so we're super excited about it. You know, our guys do a lot of G.I. Joe Classified, Marvel Legends and everything. So the figure is essentially a G.I. Joe Classified articulation, but we're going to have, you know, we're going to put all the bells and whistles as far as like paint deco and accessories and whatnot goes. So we'll be putting out really special figures with that. And it's fun to finally be doing a human line as opposed to just, you know, what I felt like people might've thought we were kind of one trick pony. And so it's exciting to introduce our first IP of 2024. And we're working on some other really exciting stuff too, that we can't talk about just yet, but I think we're really going to blow people's socks off when they see what it is.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. And I mean, I talk about striking while the iron is hot, you know, coming off of kind of the popularity. I think, you know, Ghost of Tsushima did really well for kind of the idea of samurai in pop culture, you know, really kind of brought it back to attention. That game was, you know, a beautiful Kurosawa-esque, you know, experience. And then, like you said, you know, things like Blue-Eyed Samurai, which are, you know, I haven't had a chance to watch that yet, but I've heard nothing but excellent things about it. And, you know, I'm excited because really there hasn't been, with the exception of, I think Figma did a Ghost of Tsushima figure, you know, in the 1:12 scale, but there really hasn't been accessible samurai figures on the market in a very long time. And usually they're so encumbered in their articulation because of the, you know, their outfit, because of what they're wearing. Right. So I'm really, really excited to be able to get one that moves, you know. That's,
yeah, I mean, that's really, one of the cool things is, I will say that is one of the things that's different as far as like the G.I. Joe Classified. So if you look at the Classified, they've got that ab crunch and then they have the bowl. On the samurai figures that, you know, the ones that are wearing the armor, they do have the bowl, but they don't have the ab crunch. So there is going to be a limit as far as like that goes. But the bare-chested one, I don't know if you saw both of them, that one's going to have a mid-torso. It's not the same style, but it's going to allow for a good range of motion. And that's one of the things about Spiro. We want to make sure that we're creating toyetic toys. We don't want you to just kind of like play with it for a little while and put it on the shelf. All the stuff that we're putting out is meant to be enjoyed, played with. If your kid wants to kind of check it out and stuff, you're not going to kind of like be secretly cringing that they're going to break it, you know? So as we start to release products, you'll see that the unifying factor is that they aren't super high end, but they're what the big toy companies should be doing as far as like paint apps and including accessories, paired with their great sculpting that the big companies are doing, and their durability. So hopefully that makes sense. It's going to be something that's collectible, but something you're not scared to like take and play with. And if the kids bash them up a little bit, it won't do any kind of damage to them.
That's awesome. Yeah. Very much so looking forward to it. Any news on when we're going to hear about pre-orders or anything on that Bushido line?
It will be towards the, let's see, it'll be the fall of 2024. What we're going to start doing is releasing images. So the idea is to do them in small waves of two figures. So in other words, the first wave will be fully decked out samurai and then an Oni character. And then we'll keep repeating that. So you'll have a samurai type character and an Oni in each wave until, you know, that's what we're going to reveal until we do pre-orders in the fall.
Okay. Awesome. Now, before we head into our follower Q&A, just one other question for you.
The dreaded Q&A.
I think you're going to survive. We haven't had anybody faint, pass out, leave, rage quit. We haven't had that yet. So
that is
fingers
a dang
crossed.
Shame. Oh, well.
You're coming up now on a decade of Spiro, this coming June, actually.
That is wild.
It's crazy, right? Research. What has changed about the collector space in your perspective in the last 10 years?
Well, I will say, I think the biggest and most obvious change is the favorability of the 4-inch scale taking second seat to the 6-inch scale. I kind of saw the writing on the wall when Star Wars released the Black Series, and then Hasbro picked up the Marvel Legends figures from Toy Biz. I thought, those are cool, but I've got such a big collection of 4-inch scale, and it slowly won me over. I still love the 4-inch scale, but I think that's the biggest difference. The cost of the figures have increased quite a bit, but that's kind of the cost of living across the board. But to kind of get back into the positive, I find that the form and function have really found a nice balance. I feel like the last 5 years, the sculpts have really kind of found their sweet spot where they still look like toys and they can move really great, but they don't have kind of that garish, obvious articulation that that Toy Biz era, which is great for the time, but it's obvious that there's a big difference as far as that goes. I also found that that kind of printed eyes, whenever that started, I want to say it was about 4 years ago, it didn't look that great. I feel like they've kind of they've dialed it in, but they've also learned not to use it where it's not necessary, if that makes sense. I've noticed some figures they don't use it on. And so I've kind of appreciated that they're not just kind of putting it on everything. There's certain characters don't really need it. It makes sense for a movie character, but not necessarily a comic book character. So it's nice that we're finding that balance as far as that goes. And then one of the other differences that I noticed was, the packaging from 10 years ago, Marvel Legends hasn't really changed much, but I do feel like the boxed characters, in the 6-inch scale has really kind of become the standard. I feel like Super 7 just puts out the best looking presentation as far as packaging goes. We're starting to get out of the woods with the blind boxes that, didn't have the preview window, the plastic window that, people that are going to open want to kind of QC their figures and make sure their eyes and stuff look good. It seems like they're kind of course correcting on that and going back to the windowed figures, which, I kind of joked, they're almost like Schrodinger's figure. It's like, do I even have the right figure in this box,
Yeah. It was a rough period for mint collectors. Very rough.
Right.
Period.
Yeah. I mean, I had a bad day a couple of months ago and I got my scrap iron from Amazon and I took it, opened it and it was like, it was just part swaps. And I was like, what? Oh, what is going on here? They were great. Like they sent me a replacement in like 2 days, but I was just like, oh, this would not happen if there was a window, So, that's some of those are some of the real changes and ebb and flows that I had noticed in the last 10 years. We didn't become, I didn't get my partner until 2019. So it's been, a couple of years having a partner, which is great because, we can bounce, financials and stuff, go over that kind of stuff. And it's not just all the weight's not just on my shoulders, which is really, really nice.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, it's got to be tough. I mean, frankly, I can't imagine you guys doing it just two people. But you know, one person, that's a lot of weight.
Right, right. Well, he's a CPA and he's got his own accounting firm, so he's a little bit more experienced with that kind of the financial aspect than I am. I'm the creative side, and we do have our employees. We've got, you know, three great, you know, fulfillment employees, and then we've got our customer service. And our sculptors are freelance. So, but you know, we love them all, and we're a lot smaller than people realize, which is cool. I mean, I feel like people think we're way bigger than we are, and we want to get there, but we're not quite there yet, you know?
So this leads us to our Q&A. And for those, listening that are maybe listening for the first time, anytime we have a guest on, we post on Instagram at AIC_podcast. If you keep an eye out there, when we have a guest on, we will put a post up, a story up, and we'll collect questions and kind of cull through them and pick some of the really good ones for this Q&A section here. So if you are interested in participating in a future episode of Adventures in Collecting, definitely give us a follow at AIC_podcast. So that way you can submit your questions. Now, for this Q&A, we actually already answered the question that was kind of thrown out by a bunch of people kind of similarly. So I melded them into one question. We already took care of that one. But we have two questions from two specific askers. So, Jason, you ready to do a little Q&A?
I am ready.
All right, so our first question comes from at BradLovesPetSmart on Instagram. And he asks, is it possible to get a reprint of the first issue of the comic?
Not in the form of the Kickstarter version, but on March 6th, the series is going to be in comic shops everywhere. So if you go to your favorite comic shop in January and request them to order copies of Animal Wars of the Kingdom, you'll be able to get that first issue again. And we'll be offering all the previous issues once a month at your favorite comic shop. Each issue will also be offered the standard edition, which everyone from the Kickstarter that backed has received, as well as collector's covers by a bunch of really great artists. So whenever you order your comics, make sure you order the standard edition as well as collector's cover.
Craig, Dave, my friends at Zap Comics, I know you're going to be listening to this. I'm going to be bothering you in January.
Yes, please.
So, yeah, we got to make sure Zap gets those.
Yeah, they'll be in the Diamonds Previews catalog.
Amazing. Yeah, so you heard Jason. Go to your local comic shop this January, just in a few weeks from now, if you're listening to this when it's brand new, and make sure you get on them to order Animal Warriors of the Kingdom. Next question, and last question, comes from at Acorn30. Will there be alternate feet packs in different colors down the line? Now, you kind of sort of answered this already, but maybe we can be a little more specific.
So the idea behind that is we kind of want to do those, you know, we mentioned it before, but we kind of want to do the definitive Ancients offerings. So it won't be a character in the book, but it'll be, it'll be a mammal that will have, you know, like I said, it'll have like a canine head, an ape head, a cat head, and it'll have the corresponding feet and hands in the pack, you know, included in the packaging. So that way you don't have to add, it won't be like a necessarily add-on type thing.
That's great. And I mean, for those who are interested in army building too, that's a huge plus.
Right. It's kind of the idea where it's essentially catering towards army builders / customizers.
Very cool. And I know that was a brief Q&A session, but you survived it.
We were thorough, right? We answered everything throughout the course of the interview. So
yeah,
kind of knocked it out.
So now I'm going to do my best here. This is usually Dave's shining moment on the show where he asks the final question that we ask all of our guests. He does it in a very, very believable impersonation of Inside the Actor Studios' James Lipton. I am not going to attempt to do that impersonation. I'm not going to do it justice, and I don't want to step on his toes while he's on vacation. But the final question that we ask all of our guests, what is the strangest and or favorite piece in your collection? It can be one of each, or it can be both.
So I think the strangest thing figure in my collection is the, I want to say his name's Piggy from the Power Rangers Lightning Collection. It is such a weird, bizarre character. It's one of the figures that's stayed in my kitchen since I opened it on Christmas. Usually I get new figures and they kind of hang out in the kitchen for a couple of weeks, and then they make their way back up into my collecting area and on the shelves. This one has stood the test of time. He just kind of hangs out and mocks me as I eat breakfast. So that would definitely be the weirdest one.
I love that Pudgy Pig is judging you.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Gladiator helmet. He's judging you while you eat breakfast.
Just an amazing figure. The engineering's fantastic. It's such a weird, goofy, wonderful thing. I just love it.
Do you ever eat bacon and stare at him directly while you're eating it?
No, but I should, you know. I think that's a good call. Like, just kind of like reestablish dominance, you know.
I am the alpha.
Right, right. And, you know, this is going to be a little bit of the guy in the band wearing the band shirt moment. But my favorite figure in my collection would definitely be Pale in his adventure armor. Just because of, the journey that went through and the sacrifice and work that went into making this figure line. And, I mentioned before, Pale's kind of my avatar for the IP. We've been just so busy since the line arrived in the summer, and about a week and a half, about a month ago, I'd say, I had just a little downtime. My little girl had gone to sleep and everything. And I was kind of cleaning off her nightstand, and there was a Pale figure, and I picked it up and I kind of looked at it and I thought to myself, holy shit, we did that. That's crazy, you know? And it's funny, at the beginning of the interview, you were talking about, you know, I'm not going to say we and whatnot, but my inner monologue is always we and us. So I kind of laughed to myself, because I'll give myself pep talks and I'm like, okay, we're going to have a good day, right? We're going to get all this stuff on our checklist done, right? And I'm like, yeah, we're doing good today, you know? So I just kind of thought that was amusing. But well, yeah, favorite figure is definitely Pale.
I don't think it's a case of wearing the band shirt to the concert. You know, you did something incredible here. You created a character from nothing, right? From absolutely nothing. You put him on the pages of a comic book. You casted him into plastic. He's in countless homes. You know, he's on, and honestly, from dad to dad, and he's on your daughter's nightstand. I mean,
right?
Like,
how cool is that?
That's just like that literally is. I'm honestly getting a little emotional just kind of thinking about it for you. I mean, like, it is a really really cool thing, and you should be super super proud that is your favorite figure in your collection.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
So before I let you go, please remind our listeners, everyone out there, where can they learn more about Spiro Toys? Where can they follow you online? And most importantly, where can they pick up the comics and the figures themselves?
So if you want to get the figures now, you can get them on Amazon.com. You can go to Big Bad Toy Store, or you can buy directly from us, which we would appreciate, at SpiroToys.com. If you want to enjoy the comic books, we do have them in digital forms on our website in the comic section. But if you would like a physical copy, you can start getting those on March 6th. Make sure you ask your comic shop to carry the Animal Warriors of the Kingdom series. And I think that's about it. Did I answer everything? We're in a bunch of really great mom and pop shops across the country. And of course, I'm having a brain fart right now.
Well, if you have a local toy store near you and you want them to carry Animal Warriors of the Kingdom, have them reach out. Have them reach out to Jason. Have them reach out at Spiro Toys, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We would love that. We offer wholesale packages for mom and pop shops as well as big stores. I forgot to mention Entertainment Earth has them as well. So, basically whoever you like to order your toys through, they should be on there. And if they're not, let us know so we can get them to carry it.
Awesome. Well, Jason, with that, we're going to close up shop here, and we can't wait to see what comes next from Spiro Toys. Thank you so much for hanging out with me tonight.
Oh, thanks for having me. And I really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to listening to how funny my voice sounds on this podcast.
Thank you, dear listener, for hanging out with us today. Subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen, and then tell your friends to do it. Thanks also to Joe Azari, the golden voice behind our intro. Our music is Game Boy Horror by the Zombie Dandies. Find more about them both in our show notes.
Follow us on social media at AIC_podcast on Instagram and Twitter. Stop by and say hi, show us your toy hauls, and share your toy stories. Maybe we'll talk about it in a future episode.
Don't try this at home. Void where prohibited and some assembly required. Each sold separately, not a flying toy. Consult a physician if your toy run exceeds more than 4 hours.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.